Welcome to Making Room, a podcast inspiring people to accelerate change by being a catalyst, honoring creativity, and acting with courage. We are making room for the greatest potential of our community.
All right, welcome back to Making Room. I tell you what, we got finishing a really inspiring conversation. We have Brian Collier, Executive Vice President for Foundation for Carolinas, and Sherry Chisholm, Executive Director for Lead and Opportunity, and two just people who are just really champions of opportunity. You know, we say a lot of social mobility, but I think what I loved so much is we began to really see, I'm dying to read this book now, this Nordic Theory of Everything, that a lot of opportunity and social capital and thinking about people, especially across communities, comes from love. It doesn't come from hierarchy. It doesn't come from, I'm going to impart something or give you something. It comes from, you know, we're in this together, and that there are an abundance of resources. If we really look, you know, we say a lot that we have to see each other more, you know, and we have to also see that we're going to be okay. And I know that's hard. I struggle with it too, but I'm just curious for y'all, like what, Shivani, we'll start with you, you know, aside from, we got to learn about what candies we liked, and I'm trying to find yours since we did find Brian's special gummy bears. We learned more about our favorite candies, yes. But what are you taking? I mean, we said, gosh, we could just keep going. So what are you taking away?
Great treat to talk to the two of them. In some of my community and advocacy work, I have quoted and talked about and referenced the Opportunity Task Force and the foundation in so many things. So to finally actually get to meet in person folks that are at the top and leading such a tremendous work was such an honor and a treat. So, and then to hear that there is true intentionality and pure love and lived experience that leads that work in our community is also it's a good reminder that, you know, we do interact with people who are human and have these things that they bring to the table with them, and it's oftentimes not asked about once you reach that higher position. So I think it was a nice way to reflect. I loved the themes that came out around abundance, about love and universality. Like, why don't we profusely give out love to everyone? Like, everyone benefits from that, regardless of what place you are in life and what things you have or do not have. We all benefit when someone is providing support and someone is lifting you up and someone is showing you love. And so why not that in our community? And then when there are spaces where somebody might need a little bit more than that, we create those things. We create those experiences and that additional love out of a good heart and that idea of solidarity. So I think that definitely resonated with me, of just thinking through how we approach when we are thinking about decision making and change in a system or a change in a culture, like coming from that space of love and thinking about everyone, and then also honoring and acknowledging that there are people that might need additional sources of love.
Yeah, that's a great answer. So I think what I've just been reflecting on since we had the conversation was something Brian said about just first admitting that you didn't get here by yourself or on your own, and just realizing all the factors that came into making you who you are. And so, John, I related to something in discussion we had where we talked about how, you know, there's a, because I am African-American male and sometimes I'm the only one in the room, there's this propensity to think that, oh, you're special. And what the conversation we had was, well, you know, there are factors in my life that help me make it seem that way, but I know people who are just as talented as me. There's one guy I'm thinking about in first grade, just as talented as me, but life went in a very different direction, right? And just went to the other path. And so I've just been sitting here thinking about all the things, the very little things that make that can help you along your way. Like just one person, an academic advisor giving me advice, or even my parents teaching me about the history of my great-grandparents and my great-grandfather graduating from college back in 1908. Like, these types of things just really just sort of had poured into me, or even like I was a part of a group of four guys and friends, and this group of friends, if we were all focused on the wrong thing, my life could have gone a different way. But the fact that we're all kind of like a little bit of, we're still cool, but we're still a little nerd. We cared about schoolwork, and so we did our work. That little fact, having that friend group, and then curbing my wife through high school. She wasn't my wife in high school, but you get where I'm going. and even down to
you
the small.
You knew back then.
I didn't know. I didn't know. And then even down to, like, we had a friend, and someone in the community once talked to me about this, about how they're trying to help talented young African-American students, and they said they need a place. And it didn't hit me until I realized a key component of, I think, my success in staying on track was one of our friends' mom, parents, always let us come over. We'd come over anytime we wanted to. We'd come there at 2 o'clock in the morning. It didn't matter. That was the safe space. And so instead of being out doing who knows what, we're in this safe space where she, who was an educator, could actually look out for us and make sure we were doing the right thing. She put us in the summer programs. And so I think about all these things that feed into how we all get, or we each get to where we are, and then how can we pour that back out into others so that they can follow that same path. And that's really the social capital I think Brian was getting at.
You know, when we went to dinner yesterday at John's place, and we were all tasked, like John does, of answering a specific question.
Yeah.
And it was the idea of having, like, what home meant to you. And in that moment, I had answered about feeling comforted and feeling safe and feeling loved. Right. And it sounds like even the space that you were able to go to, your friend's mom's place, but, like, imagine a place where, like, places that you go, whether it's school, whether it's a home or a business, where that idea of being comforted and welcomed and loved existed, and it then fosters this additional opportunity to create social capital and create these sparks of intentional interaction, where once you feel safe, you're allowed to let your guard down a little bit, then you're open to receive that potential interaction and then move on it, right? Whereas if you go into a space and it feels sterile and you're not sure if you're supposed to touch anything or sit on that like fancy sofa or, you know, speak in a certain way or dress in a certain way, you're not ready to receive any of that.
Yeah.
No, that's great.
And I think knowing that's what I've learned even, you know, from Tony and Enzo, who are both from Argentina, is that I haven't really entertained with people culturally from their background. And so Tony also, he's a chef, right? And so, like, the first time, like, I just turned the grill on and they brought, you know, steak and lamb chops. And I'm used to always thinking, I have to cook and do all this. And, like, if people from Argentina, they tell me all the time, it's like, we cook together. And so it's actually, and when the food's ready, like, you eat it right away. And it's almost, like, offensive not to culturally. Yeah. So it's caused me to, like, it's so rewarding because now I'm taking like a back seat or we're all working together. And that happened. It did take me initially to have to take a step back to think, okay, this is not what I'm used to.
You have your buffet table
ready. Yeah. Yeah. It's all like, but you think about it, for me doing a lot of that entertaining to myself, it is so nice, you know, and to have that. And I just think, the more we are curious of each other and the more we have, you know, the other thing that's really on my mind and heart right now is this safety net and second chances. And I just can't get the thought of Bryan Stevenson's quote that we're all more than the worst thing we've ever done, you know? And I think when he was talking about some European countries, you know, and this isn't a comparison or, you know, knock on the U.S., is that the margin for error here is really thin. Mm. And if you don't have networks and social capital, you know, haven't had family members who've experienced addiction and incarceration, and then to see that that becomes a mark on them for the rest of their lives, no wonder, you know, you can't like mess up right here. And I think about those mistakes could have been mine. You know, there's things I've done that would probably have gotten me, you know, in prison. You know, minor things, nothing crazy, but still, I'm not perfect, you know, and so I just didn't get caught or I didn't get pulled over the night I might have had too much to drink when, you know, those things occurred early in my 20s. And so, yet it's so easy to say, oh, that's a bad person. Oh, gosh, you know, and let's lock them up. And it's like, really? Like, there are people that do bad things. We have to acknowledge that. But, you know, I think humans innately are wired for love. We're wired for connection. We're also wired for struggle and challenge. Mm-hmm. And we're trying to, like, figure stuff out together. So that struck a chord to me is what are the safety nets we have, you know, having transitioned out of a job last year and even applied for unemployment the first time in my life. And that's not a fun experience. It's not an easy experience. And so, you know, what are ways, not from shame and helping, but from love and abundance, that we can speed up change, right? And, you know, let's as you say, Shivani, like, let's take some action. And I feel like today I got sort of more reconnected to that, because my life, to your point, Brandon, is totally about social capital.
Yeah.
The only reason I'm here is for people. And yes, I've worked, I've done things, but I feel like even if you sold and, you know, you're Steve Jobs and people bought your iPhone, well, someone bought your iPhone, yeah, right? You know what,
right,
I mean? Yeah. Like, you didn't do it. Someone had to transact,
that's
with,
right,
you.
Right.
And yes, there's incredible things we do as individuals, and we should honor people's innate gifts. That's great. But that this is a more communal thing, I think, we think about. And I'm both struggling and just in an inquiry about how does that happen more naturally,
right,
but also an intentional, you know, and just maybe even want to get away from I know we said force, but more just intentional. Like, those things work. I mean, it works when you spend time with someone of an entirely different culture, mm-hmm, and get to learn about their culture. Right. So,
yeah, I agree. I don't, if you ever get bored, I did this one point a long time ago, just starting from as early as you can remember and just write down name of every person that has made an impact in your life.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even know what made me do it, but it was like, the list was like crazy long. Awesome. I mean, it was like hundreds of people. And some of them, I couldn't even remember their name, but it's kind of like that person that one time.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, it's just, you just lose track. You don't think about it, and you just think back and it's like, oh, well, I did this. But it's really all these people who share their social capital with you, important to you, mm-hmm, and made these open doors for you. So,
yeah. And then the next homework assignment would be to then go back and, like, thank those people and tell them.
Yeah,
right?
That's true. I can't find, I don't know where that list
the
is.
The random person.
That's,
yes,
right. Let's thank the random person.
Well, you know, the person I'm thinking about right now in the last 10 years, a mutual friend of ours, Molly Shaw. Mm-hmm. And I think about, you know, both the blessing and the amazing opportunity to serve on the Communities of Schools Board of Directors. And it was her and David Head, who, you know, is at Grant Thornton, that first reached out and gave me a first, like, significant board opportunity. And then I remember the program Difference Makers, where I got to connect with the students all the time, that, you know, Molly nominated me to be a part of that. And so, like, I can, you know, even from being on the lead in on opportunity, the task force with Brookings, it was just like these, you know, so many things where she's like, you need to be at this. And also that she knew, like, I would show up and bring everything I had.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so the more we think of even sharing, so, I mean, you talked about this with her team, both of you do this, of like, once you kind of know someone's heart and mm-hmm. purpose, and then a light bulb goes off where you're like, oh, yeah, this is for Shivani.
Yeah.
This is for Brandon, the people mm-hmm. that think like that. So I hope Molly can listen to this and just know what an impact, you know, she has made in so many ways around this work and opportunity. And just how much that organization, clearly I serve, I volunteer. It's not about that. It's that I just feel like I've learned so much, and I've been able to make mistakes with team members there. I've been able to learn. I've been able to grow. And I think that's so much about it, like how we grow together.
Yeah. Well, I think also, too, just, you know, while we're speaking, because we talked about Charlotte and the Social Mobility Task Force and just the report, what I do love about Charlotte, and having grown up here, so I love a lot about Charlotte, but I love that our community really is, and even like the corporate community, is sort of centered in this philanthropic sort of space, and that a lot of the leaders are also involved in the community, and it goes back to the days of Hugh McAllister and Bank of America and the Duke Energy Wachovia, the four guys in the room that we talk a lot about in the community. But that tradition is carried on, and so for someone like Molly to be that for you, I mean, there's so many people I can think back to who are, for me, it's like, you know, I think you come here, you can contribute to the community, you can get involved, and you can actually make a difference and actually be on these boards with leaders when you're pretty young. Yeah. Like my first one was in my 20s. And so I really do love that about this community. And so I do think that we have an opportunity here, like Brian was saying, where I am hopeful that we can sort of make some of these changes and try some things here that may work in other places.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do agree. I think, you know, Charlotte is small enough of a city that there is this like deep sense of human connection, and there's not very many degrees of separation for the people that are really passionate and interested in this type of work. But I think we also are doing a great job of reflecting that in the smaller businesses and the larger corporations, kind of right. making sure that we are all speaking the same language. And while historically there have been a lot of silos, once you think about programs and interventions that are working, I think we're doing a better job of understanding and talking to each other so that we're not all trying to do the same thing in the same space and forgetting about a completely other different part of the town. So I appreciate that. And I think that the more and more we talk about the intention and the purpose and the why and what our visions are, what our missions are globally across the community, the more we are able to stay aligned and make sure that we are also heading in the same direction. And so I think that having those conversations is really important, because it's really easy to get in the weeds and like talk about the work and and we sometimes we'll forget our whys.
Yeah. I agree. One other thing I had just been thinking about from learning from COVID, right? So you gave them the book One, right? And you said it only takes one. And I was just thinking about this because I used to be in a place, and you know, and I wanted to poke Brian a little bit on toxic philanthropy and why he got disgruntled with philanthropy for a little bit, because I've been there. And I think we had this discussion, Siobhan, I may have told you this too, it's like, we just focus on this one person at a time thing. And it's like, we're dealing with big issues. We need like a big change. But then like if I was thinking about it recently, and if someone would told me, this one virus that starts spreading like one person at a time, really, I mean, that it would shut down the whole world. Of like, no, there's no way that could happen. It could originate from one place in the world and shut down the whole thing. But why can't what we're talking about, this connection, this inspiration, changing the way we're thinking about things for people to live in this way of abundance, that we're not fighting against each other. You can succeed, I can succeed, and we can succeed even better if we do it together. Why can't that spread one person at a time in the same way a virus does?
The love pandemic.
Did you just coin that?
And the way you said it, and it sounded like a commercial. We're filming, you know?
I love that.
Brian just signed you up, Tasha.
I love it.
Well, it is, because I think, and maybe what occurred to me as you said that, is the tension too, right? Because you're right. Like, we do need these, we do need massive scale policy, right? We do need some of these, quote, system-wide changes, right? Like universal pre-K. Like, that's a huge, like, that took a body of work. Mm-hmm. Kudos to the county and the other leaders who figured that out. But on an individual level, there is, and maybe there's a tension of both. There isn't a right answer. And I think that's what I'm continuing to remind myself, because it is like, well, what side, where should I be on this? And it's like, well, all I know is here. And it's
hard to keep up with the
it
different
tends
sides.
To work. And so holding, you know, I'll just keep coming back to that thought of holding tension. We talked about Denise Watts, who was also another huge catalyst in my career, having worked with her in all nine schools in the West Corridor when she was superintendent of Project Lift. And I just remember her being able to, you know, work with, you know, foundation executives like Brian and others, yet they loved her. The funders loved her. Then you would walk into a school and teachers gravitated to her, and they knew she was ride or die, and she was one of them. And then the principals were like, so it was just the, I think the idea of what I believe, what I would like to see more of in this community, is the ability to see and honor the value in each person and honor where they're at. It doesn't mean, right, we need change, right? Especially if people are dying and suffering. We got to like speed this thing up. But we've got to do it too without robbing somebody of their basic, you know, human rights as a person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think the more of those bridges that I think we have, people who can connect to the boots on the ground and the work at a granular level to all the way to leadership and can and speak for both sides and really see the long game, I think is really important, right? So if you can serve as that bridge in some way, in some capacity, and have that true depth of love for humanity and be able to then speak for and speak on behalf of and create those spaces, create the room for people at the table. I think that moves us.
It moves us going. The love pandemic. I think we could just close on that.
Yeah.
You know, if I would drop this mic, but it looks pretty expensive.
Brian's shaking his head.
Yeah. I'm going to get an invoice, drop the mic. Hope that was worth it.
Sorry.
Well, this has been awesome. You know, I think this one kind of came full circle for me of like even why we first started this.
I agree.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we talked about, personally, I'm feeling moved by today because I think it got back to probably something that was deep in each of us, mm-hmm. you know, and that we care. Not only have we been a product of this, but we care so much and about sharing our relationships and seeing someone. And so it just, I think it got me reconnected to a little bit of that, like, you know, like any entrepreneur, when you can forget why you did something, I think today was what it was a lot about for me personally.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I agree. I said I grew up here and I actually lived in New York City. We're living in New York City. And I remember telling my wife, Kirby, which sounded crazy at the time, I want to move back home to Charlotte because I believe there's more opportunity there than there is in New York. And it is borne out in my career. I mean, I've actually joined a board, national board based in New York, that if I hadn't moved to Charlotte, there's no way I would have joined that. Right. There's so much opportunity in this place. And there's so many people with like good hearts who want to do the right thing. I think it's easy for us to kind of go about our daily lives and we're separated and just get caught up in being oblivious to sometimes the pain and plights of others. But there's so much potential here, and hearing that and what they're working on and how they're trying to unleash that potential, like you said, it motivates me of why I moved back home and what my true purpose in coming back home was to help this city grow in the way that I know it can, and to benefit all the people who may be like me 30 years ago, right? So the little kids right now. So yeah, I'm energized and motivated. This was exactly that session, that podcast awesome. Session.
Well,
exactly
we are so grateful that you came back home. And it's funny that you say that, because even as we were finishing out training, my husband and I had the same conversations about, you know, well, we could move back to Chicago where your family is, or we could move to Florida where my family is. And you know, we would have this built-in community and people that we knew. But something about Charlotte felt like I could do something, right? I could be somebody here who I would kind of get lost in the woods if I went to Chicago in this big city where there are probably a bunch of other people that are interested in the things that I'm interested in and are already doing that work. But here, like, I have this smaller network and I know these people and I think that we can actually get really well connected in this space and do the things that we do. So,
and to be able to take care of me in the apartment next door, and I got to sneak in for smoothies and dinner, and
exactly.
I mean that had to be a draw too.
It was definitely a draw.
Okay, that was at the list. John showing up unannounced, awesome. So, well, this has been great, y'all, and I'm so excited to keep this going in our future conversations.
Yeah, still here. All right.
We invite you to continue making room with us. You'll find this episode and all of our exciting and meaningful conversations on Apple, Spotify, or really anywhere you choose to listen to podcasts.
Join the Making Room movement and get more info at makingroomwithus.com or follow us on Instagram at Making Room With Us.
Thank you for showing up for us and each other. Until next time.
You are wonderful and full of truth. Just as you. So full of truth, just as you are. Ooh. You are wonderful. just as you are.